Aaron didn't answer right away. Sarge waited a moment before standing. Aaron looked at him, but still didn't reply. Sarge let out a breath and took a quick step towards him. In one quick motion, he grabbed Aaron's pants and jerked them down. Aaron jumped. "What are you doing?" he howled. Sarge sat back down on the stool without saying anything. Leaning over, he slid the bucket of tools Mike had set out over in front of him. Reaching down, he pawed through it and removed a pair of tin snips. Looking back up at Aaron, he repeated his question. Aaron simply stared back.
"Look, we were doing so well. You and I are just talking. I can assure you that whatever sort of threat Billy's laid on you pales in comparison to what I will do to you."
Aaron still didn't reply. Sarge looked at the snips, working them a couple of times as he looked into Aaron's eyes.
"I see you're not circumcised."
Aaron's head was suddenly clear. The haze in his head vanished as the fog retreats from the rising sun. He looked at the tin snips, then at himself. Surely he isn't serious.
"I'm only going to take a little off the top," Sarge said.
Then Sarge raised his hands and made a show of trembling them.
"But at my age, they shake just a bit."
When Sarge started to reach for his manhood, Aaron screamed,
"All right, all right!"
Sarge stopped and leaned back on the stool.
"I'm listening."
Aaron looked at the snips again.
"Billy hooked up with some DHS guys." He looked up at Sarge. "They have a real hard-on for you guys."
Sarge smiled.
"I wonder why."
I don't know. They just told me to come over here and watch you guys. I was supposed to count how many of you there are, get a feel for your security routines, patrols, that sort of thing."
He paused for a moment and winced.
"Can you please cut me down? Please, my shoulders hurt so bad."
Before Sarge could answer, Ted leapt from the workbench. Sarge quickly stood up and spun around. From outside the garage, a voice said,
"Too late. You're already dead."
Dalton stepped through the open garage door. Ted shook his head and mumbled,
"You creep around like a damn cat or some shit." "That's a good way to get your ass ventilated," Sarge added.
"Nah, you know it was me,"
Dalton replied, as he leaned against the workbench beside Ted. Looking at Aaron, he raised his eyebrows.
"Oh, I didn't know it was that kind of party."
Sarge laughed.
"We were just talking about his upcoming circumcision."
Dalton jerked his head to the side.
"I wouldn't take too much from the poor boy."
Sarge laughed.
"That's what I said."
"He tell you anything?"
Sarge looked back at Aaron.
"Oh, he's been pretty chatty up to this point. But he says his shoulders hurt, and he wants down. Tell you what, Aaron, I've got one more question for you. Answer it, and I'll cut you down. How's that sound?"
Aaron hesitated for a minute, then nodded slightly.
"Where's Billy Boy and his merry band of fucktards hold up?"
Aaron's eyes closed as he replied,
"We're at the Elks camp."
"Good man, Aaron. I'm a man of my word, and I'm going to cut you down."
Sarge pulled his knife from its sheath. Aaron saw the large piece of steel made by Bussy knives. Pointing the knife at Aaron, Sarge said,
"But you know I'm going to have to tie you up."
Aaron nodded, and Sarge swept the blade through the rope, and Aaron crashed to the concrete floor.
"I'll tie him up," Ted said, as he hopped off the bench.
Dalton quickly stepped forward.
"Let me do it."
Dalton went up to Aaron and knelt down. He untied the piece of rope from Aaron's hands. Aaron didn't resist. He was spent. Dalton rolled Aaron onto his stomach and grabbed his left hand. He brought the arm up over Aaron's head and folded it down behind his back. Aaron moaned in pain, as it was certainly uncomfortable.
Grabbing the right hand, he swept it behind Aaron's back and brought the hand up to meet the left hand. With the hands now together, Dalton used the piece of rope and bound them. Aaron cried out in pain once again. Sarge was shaking his head.
"Damn, Dalton. I've seen some twisted shit, but that takes the cake."
Dalton stood up and examined his work.
"Just a little something I learned over the years."
"What kind of fucking work did you do?" Ted asked. Dalton glanced over and said,
"Corrections," bouncing his eyebrows. "I didn't think that kind of shit was legal." "If the cameras didn't see it, it didn't happen."
Sarge knelt down beside Aaron.
"How many peckerwoods does the DHS have?"
"I don't know," Aaron moaned.
Sarge wrapped his knuckles on the back of Aaron's head.
"Come on now. You've got to have an idea."
"There's a bunch of them. I don't know how many. We're kept away from them. They put us in some cabins on the east side of the camp. We weren't allowed in the rest of the camp," Aaron replied.
He was talking into the concrete, so the words came out slightly muffled.
"Why were you guys hooked up at the DHS? Sarge asked.
Aaron groaned.
"Billy said we were going to have some fun."
Sarge tapped Aaron's head again.
"And just what do you and Billy consider fun?"
"It wasn't my idea."
Tapping his head again, Sarge replied.
"But you said we."
"That's not what I meant," Aaron croaked.
"Back to my question. How many?"
Mumbling into the concrete, Aaron replied,
"I heard Billy say once there must be close to 100 of them."
Ted let out a low whistle. Sarge looked back at him and nodded. Looking back at Aaron, he said,
"Aaron, we'll be back later to talk some more. Don't mess around in here."
Sarge rose to his feet and motioned for the others to follow him and headed into the house. Once in the kitchen, Sarge poured himself a cup of coffee and sat down at the table. Dalton poured himself a cup as well before taking a seat. Ted spun a chair around and sat down, resting his elbows on the back of the chair's back.
"How can you drink that shit cold?" Ted asked.
"Hot or cold, it's always good,"
Sarge replied as he took a sip.
"What are we going to do with him?" Dalton asked.
"Schwack him," Ted said.
Sarge looked at Ted for a moment.
"You think that's the right call?
You want to be looking over your shoulder?"
Sarge sipped the coffee again.
"Fawcett did say the gloves were off."
"Should we let the sheriff decide?" Dalton asked.
Sarge looked at Ted. Ted shrugged in reply.
"I guess it comes down to whether this is a military issue or a law enforcement issue," Sarge said.
"I don't think the sheriff will want to execute the poor bastard. Is there any way to lock him up?"
Dalton said. Sarge laughed.
"You don't know Morgan too well. He's got no issue with putting a sack of shit down. None."
Dalton thought for a moment, then said,
"But does he deserve it?"
"There's the rub. How do we deal with these guys when we take them? Putting them in the dirt is the easy solution, but is it the right one?" Sarge asked.
"Fuck it. Schwack 'em," Ted replied.
Sarge chuckled.
"That's your answer to everything, isn't it, Teddy?"
"Sometimes it's the only answer."
"Every time it's a permanent answer," Dalton added.
Sarge nodded his head slightly.
"We need to have a discussion on this."
Mike came back into the kitchen, knocking Ted's hat off as he passed him. Catching the hat, Ted said,
"Cut it out, dickhead."
"You get that radio to Morgan?" Sarge asked.
Mike nodded.
"Yeah, he told Livingston to stuff it up his ass. Said he'd be there tomorrow."
Sarge shook his head. "That's what I figured he'd say."
With my plans for the day changed, I was having a quick breakfast before heading to Eustis. The chickens were really laying well now and keeping us in plenty of eggs. Each morning, Little Bit would go check the laying boxes for new eggs. What she didn't tell us was there was a broody hen in the coop, sitting on eggs, and she'd let her. Bobby was scrambling eggs when Little Bit came through the door, shouting, "We've got baby chicks!" Surprised, I looked up. "What?" She ran up, holding one in her palm. "There's 7 of them. They're so cute. Look at it." She held her hand out to show me the little yellow puffball. "Where are the rest of them?" I asked. "They're out on the coop with their mama," she replied. Holding her hand up, she rubbed the chick's head as it peeped. "He's so cute." Her sisters, along with Fred and Jess, came over to look at the chick. All the girls were oohing and aahing over the hatchling. "I thought you were getting the eggs every day," I said. She smiled. "I was, but there was one hen sitting on the eggs, and I let her. She hatched them all out." Rubbing her head, I said, "Good job, kiddo. Now we have even more chickens." Mel set a plate of eggs in front of me. "Where are you going today?"
"I have to go to town."
Livingston called and said there was an issue they needed me to deal with. Taylor's head popped up. "You're going to town? Can we come? We haven't been anywhere, please." "Yeah, let us go with you. You can't go alone," Jess said. I looked at Mel. They wouldn't be able to go without her permission. She shrugged. "Don't let them get hurt." I smiled.
"Just a milk run. No big deal," I replied.
"We can go?" Taylor asked. I nodded as I stuffed a bite of eggs in my mouth.
"Sure, get your stuff together. We're leaving soon."
The girls jumped up and ran off to get ready to go to town. I guess then, once again, such an event was a big deal. It was kind of funny to see them so excited about something as simple as a ride to town.
"Can I come?"
Little Bit asked.
"No, not this time, sweetie," Mel answered, before I had to.
Putting on a pout, she said,
"I never get to go anywhere."
I smiled at her.
"When you're bigger, baby girl."
I went out on the back porch where Danny and Thad were sitting and flopped onto a chair.
"You guys going to work on that water tower?" I asked.
"Yeah. Dalton said he'd come help too. The three of us should be able to handle it," Thad said.
"Sorry to bail on you guys."
"Don't sweat it. I know you have an aversion to hard work," Danny replied with a snicker.
"Believe me, I wish I were going with you guys today."
"Don't worry about it. We'll get the tank up today."
"Be careful up there," Thad said.
I nodded and stood up.
"Thanks, guys. See you later."
I went out to the old Suburban and started it up. It cranked immediately and settled into that typical Cummins rumble. I was amazed at the old truck. It was beat when I bought it, and it had only been more abused since. Walking to the house, I grabbed my pack and a bag of mags I'd put together for road trips. With recent events, I wanted plenty of ammo when leaving here. When I got back to the truck, Sarge was there with Mike and Dalton.
"We need to talk," Sarge said.
Setting the pack into the truck, I replied,
"What's up?" "What do you want to do with that guy we caught?"
"You done with him?" I asked. Sarge nodded.
"He told me what I needed."
"Where are they hiding out?"
"Billy's hooked up with around 100 DHS, and they're at the Elks camp."
"You know where that is?" Sarge asked.
I was surprised how close they were.
"Yeah, and it's not far either. Just off 450 west of Umatilla."
"We'll have to get over there and take a look then. Back to the original question," Sarge replied.
It was a tough question. Sure, we'd caught the guy snooping around, but he hadn't done anything to us. He was obviously on the wrong side of the equation, but how should that be dealt with?
I shrugged.
"I don't know. He didn't do anything other than sneak around. Teddy wants to plant him. Says if we turn him loose, we'll be looking over our shoulders, and he's right about that," Sarge said.
"What do you say he was doing with them?" I asked.
"Same thing they all say. just doing what they had to do to survive. I rubbed my head. I hated these kinds of decisions. But in the end, I didn't want to kill someone for no real reason. Let's take him to town. I'll give him to the Eustace PD. Cecil's going to need labor in the fields, and he can be put to work there.
I like it, Dalton said.
Sarge nodded. Sounds good to me. We'll fetch him from the shed, and I'll go with you. I want to stop in Altoona and distribute the flour we've got. It will be good to do it from the Hummer, so they know it's the army giving it to them, I replied. Sarge nodded. All right, we're going to need some security, though. The girls are going with us. That should be enough.
It'll be good for them. They need to get out and put their skills to use, Dalton said.
That's what I was thinking. Let me go load his ass up and I'll meet you by the bunker, Sarge said, as he got back in the Hummer. Looking at Dalton, I said, Danny and Thad are inside. Go get some breakfast. Thanks, I think I will. I'm hungry.
The girls finally showed up with Eric in tow. They loaded up and I drove over to the bunker to wait for the old man. Ian and Perez were at the bunker, having relieved us earlier that morning. Perez was sitting on top of the bunker, smoking, as he usually did. Sitting in the truck, waiting on Sarge, the girls were wound up. They talked, all of them, at the same time. It was driving me nuts, so I got out and walked over to Ian.
Does he ever take a break from those things? I asked, nodding at Perez.
Ian shook his head.
Only to light the next one.
He's going to be a pain in the ass when he runs out.
Ian laughed.
No shit, right? Just think about that. He's already a huge pain in the ass.
Perez had lain down on the top of the bunker and raised his hand in middle finger salute.
I can hear you, assholes.
You were supposed to, I replied, getting a laugh from Ian. Perez rolled over and looked at us. Trust me, I've got plenty of smokes.
He pulled a lighter from his pocket and shook it next to his ear.
Lighters, on the other hand.
I laughed.
That's hilarious. What are you going to do when you run out of lighters?
Whatever it takes. I'll rub two sticks together if I have to.
Sarge's Hummer rounded the corner. Looking up, I said, about damn time.
Have fun in town, Ian said with a grin.
You want to go?
Waving his hands, he replied,
Oh, hell no. You can have that shit. I'm perfectly fine right here.
Going over to the truck, I asked for volunteers to ride with Sarge. Eric and Fred said they would, and quickly traded vehicles. Pulling up beside Sarge, I asked, You ready?
He nodded and pulled off. I followed him out of the neighborhood for the short ride to Altoona.
As we rode, Leanne asked, What are we doing?
We're going to stop up here at the market and give away some flour, then head into Eustace.
Where'd we get flour? And why are we giving it away? Taylor asked.
We got it from the army, and we're giving it away because a lot of people are starving. You may not think so, but we've got it a lot better than most folks out there.
She didn't say anything else, just looked out the window, as I turned into the parking lot of the Old Kangaroo. The place was pretty busy. I was surprised to see a couple of people offering some early vegetables. They must have gotten a jump on their gardens. We pulled up near the gas canopy and stopped. As we got out, I told the girls to form a security perimeter, which they did quickly and efficiently. Sarge opened the back of the Hummer and pulled one of the sacks over and cut it open. We were starting to get a little attention from some of the folks there as a couple of people wandered over to see what we were doing. Sarge looked at the first woman in earshot and said,
Get a container. I can put some of this flour in for you.
She looked at him uncertainly.
Flour? You giving it away?
Sarge nodded.
Yes, ma'am. Just get something to put it in and I'll give it to you.
She quickly ran off to the table where she was trading small bundles of lighter wood. Grabbing a cloth grocery bag, she dumped lighter wood from it before running back.
Here, you can put it in this, she said, nearly out of breath.
Sarge shook several pounds of flour into it.
There you go.
The woman looked down into the bag.
I haven't seen flour in a long time.
Looking back at Sarge, she asked,
Can I get just a little more?
Shaking his head, he replied,
I'm sorry, but we want to give everyone some if we can.
She smiled.
Oh yes, of course. Thank you so much.
Don't thank me. Thank the army.
Word quickly spread of the giveaway, and soon people were pouring in to get their share. It started out orderly enough, but when you have so many desperate people and a very limited resource, things get ugly. The girls were holding people back and only letting them through in a single file, but as more people arrived, they began pushing and shoving to get a turn. I stayed with Sarge to try to control the people there. One man came up with a 5-gallon bucket and set it down. While the measurements were strictly by eyeball, Sarge was being as fair as possible. Sarge dumped flour into the man's bucket as he stared on. When Sarge turned the bag up to stop, the man grabbed the bag and shouted,
Give me more!
Sarge jerked the bag and it split open, spilling the rest of the flour onto the ground. People in the line fell to their knees to scoop it up. The man tried to rip the bag from Sarge's hands as chaos ensued around us. I cracked the guy in the head with the butt of my rifle, knocking him down. Someone in the crowd grabbed his bucket and made off with it. The people waiting to get in the line started pushing past the girls. I could hear them shouting and the people screaming at one another. Then, just as things were about to get completely out of hand, there was a sudden burst of automatic weapons fire. It was joined by another, and everyone dove to the ground, including me. I looked up to see Leanne and Taylor holding their H&Ks over their heads. Taylor was looking around, wide-eyed. Sarge was still on his feet, and his voice boomed.
What the hell's the matter with you people? I know you're hungry. That's why we're here. But you're acting like damned animals. This is done for today. We'll try again another time, but if you people behave this way next time, we will not give food out here.
The people slowly got to their feet and looked at one another. You could see a little shame in their faces, but it was nearly masked by desperation. They were hungry. Their kids were hungry. And this was free food. What else would they do? We pushed everyone back from the truck, and I had the girls move in closer to keep everyone away. Leanne and Taylor both changed the mags in their weapons.
Good job, girls. This was getting out of hand, I said.
It was getting scary. I was afraid someone was going to knock us down, Taylor said. Looking at the crowd as they moved off, I said,
They're desperate. You can't really blame them.
Sarge closed the back of the Hummer.
We need to come up with a better plan next time. It would be better if we could portion it out ahead of time and hand it out that way.
It would, but what the hell are we going to put it in? I asked.
He shook his head. I don't know, but we need to find something. This sure as shit isn't going to work.
I agree. I wanted to stop in Umatilla and give some away, but this isn't going to happen now. It would just be a repeat of this.
Your guy's awake in the truck, Eric said.
Sarge glanced inside.
He's still tied up?
Yeah, he is.
Who the hell tied him up like that? Looks painful as shit, Eric replied.
Sarge laughed.
That would be Dalton.
I went over and looked in the truck. Eric was right. It sure as hell looked painful.
Damn, that's all kinds of fucked up.
True. But it's effective, Sarge replied.
All right, let's head to Eustace, I said, as I headed for the truck. As I followed Sarge down 19, Taylor asked,
What was wrong with those people?
Remember the other day I was telling you how good we had it compared to most people? I was looking at her in the rearview mirror. She nodded. Now you see it.
It's sad, Leanne commented.
We do have it good compared to everyone else, Jess added.
You girls remember that, I added.
Chapter 15. Sarge and I walked around the side of the table to get a look at the snake oil salesman. We found an older man standing behind the table with two younger men. The old guy was a big man with gray hair, what was left of it. Sweat beaded up on his bald head in the heat of the day. All three men were armed, and the younger two stood back, keeping an eye on everyone. The old man noticed us standing there and smiled. He stepped away from the table, and one of the younger men immediately took his place.
"So you come to run me out of town?"
Shaking my head, I replied, "Hell no. You can sell what you want." The old man smiled.
"Well, that's a first. We're usually not welcome too long in most places."
"People still trying to control what other folks are doing?" Sarge asked. Nodding, the man replied,
"Yep, it's crazy, really. They think if they can't get a drink, then they are somehow cured.
I say, let folks make their own decisions and live with the consequences," Sarge replied. The man stuck his hand out.
"Name's Bob Maples. Everyone calls me Big Bob."
Sarge shook his hand.
"Linus Mitchell, call me Sarge."
I shook his hand as well.
"Morgan, good to meet you, Big Bob."
"You going to be around for a while?" Sarge asked.
Bob shrugged. "Until the market dries up. We don't really have a plan. Just kind of go with the flow."
"Well, good luck," I said. "Let me know if you need anything."
Bob smiled. "Will do."
Sarge and I headed across the park on our way to the armory. We found the girls checking out the offerings laid out on tables and blankets. They acquired quite the following of young men as well. As we approached, I heard Taylor nearly shout,
"No, it's not for sale."
Seeing me, she gave a look of desperation. Walking up, I asked,
"What's up, kiddo?"
She pointed to an emaciated figure. "He keeps asking if our guns are for sale. I told him no, but he keeps asking." Looking at him, I said,
"She said no. What don't you understand?"
He looked at the H&K.
"Just a whole lot of gun for a little girl."
I laughed. "She ain't a little girl. And she handles it just fine." Taylor smiled.
"Thanks, Dad."
The man looked at me.
"You're her dad?"
I nodded. He took another look at the weapon before wandering off. Taylor let out a sigh of relief.
"Glad he's gone.
Everyone wants our guns, and they keep asking."
"Don't let them bother you. Just keep your eyes open," I said.
"Dad, do you have any silver? We want to get something, but don't have any money," Leanne said. Reaching into my pocket, I pulled out some silver dimes. I remember when I started collecting junk silver with this very scenario in mind. It was fun to collect, kind of like a treasure hunt. I'd go to the bank and get rolls of coins sometimes and go through them looking for occasional silver. Dimes minted prior to 1965 contained 90% silver. The Coinage Act of 1965 resulted in dimes from that point forward consisting of 75% copper and 25% nickel. No silver at all. That wasn't terribly effective, though, and I ended up buying most of it. Handing the dimes to Leanne, I said,
"Don't spend it all in one place."
She shook the coins in her hand and smiled.
"We won't."
"Don't be long. We have to get back home shortly."
"Okay. Love you,"
Taylor said as they walked away. Sarge chuckled.
"They're growing up fast, aren't they?"
"They sure are."
The girls wandered through the market, looking at everything. A smell drifted on the air that caught Jess's attention.
"That smells good. What is it?"
she asked, looking around.
"Smells like pancakes to me," Taylor added.
"It's over there,"
Leanne said, pointing. They walked over to a table with a small hibachi grill set up. Sitting on it was a small cast-iron pan. Arranged on the table were jars of colorful jelly. A woman stood in front of the table, eating a thin rolled pastry.
bright red jelly oozed from the other end and fell into the hand she held out.
"Is it good?" Taylor asked.
The woman didn't take the sweet treat from her mouth. She replied by nodding her head and half-smiling. Leanne looked at the old man and held out a dime. The old man took it and examined it, then held up two fingers. Leanne nodded, and he pocketed the coin. Taking a plastic container out, he poured a thin batter onto the skillet that covered the bottom. It cooked quickly, and he flipped it with a couple of sticks, chopstick style. When the other side was done, he removed it from the heat and laid it on a piece of cloth. Lifting the pan, he examined the coals glowing under it, and fed in a small piece of wood before setting the pan back down and starting the process again. Once the batter was in the skillet, he picked up the first one and motioned to the jars. Leanne pointed to a jar of purple jelly, and the old man spooned in a generous helping and rolled it up. Leanne anxiously took a generous bite.
"Oh, that is so good!"
Jess reached for it.
"Let me have a bite."
Leanne swiveled away from her.
"Get your own! This is so good!"
The old man never spoke as he worked. No words were ever exchanged. A couple more coins were handed over, and soon everyone was eating their own crepe. They walked through the market, enjoying the amazingly sweet treat, and talking about how good they were.
"We need to get another one of those. They are so delicious," Fred said.
"They are terrific. Hey, look at all the people over there," Jess said, pointing to Big Bob's booth.
"That's the guy selling the booze," Eric said.
"We got enough dimes to buy a bottle?" Fred asked.
"I doubt it. Plus, Dad would kill us if he caught us drinking," Leanne said. Taylor snorted.
"Yeah, he would."
"Let's just go look," Fred said. As they approached Big Bob's booth, a man walked up to the long line of people and looked around. He was wearing a backpack and slipped it off his shoulder as he craned his neck. Moving around the group, he set the pack down and started to walk away. Jess saw the pack and called out to him. Pointing at the pack, she shouted,
"Hey, you forgot your pack!"
The guy looked back for a moment, then at the pack. He seemed to hesitate, then turned and started to quickly walk away.
"That guy just left that pack over there," Jess said, pointing at the man.
"That's weird. It's like he's running away," Fred said.
"I think we need to get him," Jess said, as she turned to follow him.
"What about the bag?" Taylor asked. Jess looked over her shoulder.
"Go get it. We'll get him."
Dalton and Thad looked up at the tank. It was perched on the edge of the bucket of the tractor. A chain held it in place.
"So close," Danny said. "I could climb up there and push it. It's almost there. Looks like a little shove would do it," Dalton said.
"It ain't going to get up there by itself," Thad lamented.
Dalton climbed up onto the tractor and scrambled up to the bucket. Removing the chain, he shouldered the tank and heaved. It slid out of the bucket and landed onto the plywood platform with a thud. Danny and Thad both let out a whoop as the hardest part of the project was now over.
"Thank God," Danny shouted. "Now all we gotta do is plummet in," Thad added.
Dalton climbed off the tank and looked at the stack of pipe.
"How do you plan to tie it into the houses?"
"I was thinking of just running a pipe to the nearest hose bib on a house and connecting it there.
Open the valve and you've got water into your house," Danny replied.
Dalton nodded.
"Sounds easy enough."
They got to work on the plumbing. A 2-inch pipe was run down from the tank to the ground. There, an elbow was installed, and a manifold of sorts was constructed with some T-fittings. This is where Danny's habit of collecting and keeping things really paid off. They had all the fittings they needed, and were able to get pipe run to all the houses. Every house had a hose somewhere. The hoses were run out to meet the pipe to save as much of it as they could.
"We got lucky with this glue," Thad said,
as he shoved the last pieces of pipe together. Danny looked into the can.
Yeah, we did.
I do have one more, but it's never been opened, and I didn't want to open it yet. Soon as you do, it starts to dry out.
Danny, while we wrap this up, why don't you go fill the fire tank? Thad asked.
Danny nodded and took the tractor to get the trailer. Once the trailer was in place by the well, he dragged his generator out. While the solar setup would run the pump, it would have to run for a while to fill the large tank, and that would be rough on the system. Connecting the generator to the house, he flipped off the breaker that the solar system was connected to and started the generator. Once it was running smoothly, he flipped on the breaker for it and backfed the house. Back at the well, he dropped a hose into the tank and turned the water on. It would take a while for the tank to fill, so he went in the house for a cold drink. While Danny was gone, Dalton and Thad finished tying the houses in and went through them to make sure all faucets were turned off. It would be a shame to get the tank filled and lose the water into a septic tank because a sink was left on. Once they'd done all they could, the two men walked over to Danny's house. Maybe it would fill faster if the three of them stared at it. Danny was sitting on the trailer when the guys got there.
That thing is going to take forever to fill up, Thad said.
It's doing pretty good. I think it will take about an hour to fill it, Danny replied. Thad rubbed his hands.
I can't wait to see if this works.
Oh, it'll work.
That much water that high off the ground has to work, Dalton said.
The guys sat around shooting the shit while the tank filled. Once it was full, they pulled the tank back to the tower. Thad climbed up and dropped the discharge hose into the top of the tank on the tower. Danny started the pump, and soon water was pouring into the tank. Thad had to stay in the tower to keep the hose in, as it tended to jump out from the force of the pump.
This thing is a lot faster than the well pump, Dalton said, admiring the little gas pump.
Yeah, it's a good pump.
We found it in a forestry service building. Saved our ass when the fire came through, Danny replied.
I remember that. Was keeping an eye on that and getting ready to bug out if it got too close. We went and fought it. It was hard work, but the guard helped us a lot, and we managed to beat it back.
The gas pump had pushed the water quickly. Danny shut the pump down, and Thad dropped the hose off the tower and closed the fill port. As he climbed down, he announced,
Now's the moment of truth.
Let's go see what it looks like, Danny said.
They went to Thad's house and filed into the kitchen. Thad stood there a moment, with his hand on the faucet, looking at the guys.
Cross your fingers.
He raised the handle, and there was a gurgle, followed by small blasts of air. A little water trickled out, then more air and gurgling. After a moment, a solid stream of water began to pour from the faucet. It was greeted by cheers from the guys.
Let's go see what the shower looks like, Danny said.
Thad led the way down the hall to the bathroom. The sound of the toilet bubbling told them the tank was filling. Pulling the shower curtain back, he opened the valve, and the gurgling and spitting started again. It didn't last as long this time, and soon water was running out of the shower head.
It's real low pressure, but I think it's enough to take a shower, Thad said, as he ran his hand through the cascading water.
Yeah, that's plenty strong enough to take a shower, Dalton added.
How long do you guys think a tank will last? Danny asked.
Thad shrugged.
We'll have to see.
Dalton chuckled.
I bet the first one goes fast, everyone wanting to try it out and all.
I bet you're right. And to kick it off, I'm taking a shower right now, Thad said, as he stripped off his shirt.
On that note, I'm out of here, Dalton shouted, as he disappeared down the hall with Danny in tow.
Chapter 16. I was talking to the engineers when we were hit by the shockwave of the explosion, followed immediately by the sound. So close together, they seemed to arrive as one. Staggering, I looked up. What the hell was that?
The engineers were looking around as well, rattled from the blast. Then we saw the cloud of smoke rising over the armory, and people running. I followed them around the corner and realized the blast had come from the market. Then the reality hit me. The girls were at the market. The air was filled with cries and people shouting as I started to run towards the sound of chaos. I prayed my girls were all right and terrified at the thought of what could be. The market was destroyed. Debris littered the ground, as well as more grisly things. There were body parts everywhere. Seeing this increased my heart rate, if that was at all possible. The first person I found was Jess. She was on her knees in a daze. Her hair was a mess, all disheveled and full of dirt, pieces of wood and other debris. I dropped to my knees and grabbed her. "Are you okay?" I shouted as I looked her over. She just stared back at me. I ran my hands over her, looking for blood, but found none. So I checked her head. There was blood, but thankfully, it didn't appear to be hers. As bad as that is. I gave her a little shake. "Jess, where are the girls? Where are my girls?" She still stared back without replying. I shook her again. "Come on! Where are my girls?" She raised her hand and pointed back towards the blast site, and my heart shrank. I jumped up and started looking at the bodies on the ground. I found Leanne sitting on the ground. She too was covered in dirt and debris, plus broken glass. Glass littered the ground everywhere. Like Jess, she was dazed and trying to stand up. I grabbed her arm and helped her to her feet. "Are you okay?" I asked as she stumbled. She looked around, brushing her hair out of face. "I think so. My ears are ringing really loud and my head hurts." I was looking her over and found a bad gash on her left arm. Blood was running down and dripping from her fingers. I pulled a battle dressing from my vest and wrapped it tightly around her arm. "Where's Taylor?" I asked as I cinched off the bandage. "She was just here, right beside me." I looked around, but didn't see her. There were several bodies on the ground, and anxiety grew even more. Pointing back to where Jess was, I told Leanne to go stay with her. More people were showing up to help. Sarge and Doc appeared with Mary. "Where are the girls?" Sarge asked as he trotted up. "I don't know. I've only found Leanne and Jess so far." As I said that, Fred and Eric walked up. They too were covered in debris from the blast, but appeared unhurt. "Are you two okay?" Sarge asked. Eric was holding his head and nodded. "Yeah, I think we're all right. My head hurts, though." "You're probably concussed," Doc said. "Go over there with Jess and Leanne while we find Taylor." Eric nodded and held on to Fred as they walked back to where the girls were. Doc was already helping another injured person when I started looking for Taylor. There were a lot of wounded around, but I had to find my daughter. The cries of the wounded filled the air. Some were still screaming while others moaned in pain. "Morgan! Over here!" Mary called out. I turned to see her knelt down beside a body on the ground. A body wearing a shirt I immediately recognized. There was also an H&K lying on the ground. I ran over to her and slid on my knees, which turned out to be a huge mistake, as glass tore into both of my knees. I didn't even notice it, though, as I rolled Taylor over. What I saw shook me to the core. She was covered in blood. Her face had numerous cuts and scratches, some deep and bleeding profusely. I immediately checked her for a pulse and found one, thankfully. But she was hurt really bad. "Doc! Doc! Over here!" I shouted. He looked up from the person he was helping. Tying off a bandage, he jumped to his feet and ran over. He quickly checked for a pulse and then started to cut her clothes off with a pair of EMT shears. Removing her clothes revealed a number of deep wounds. "Is she breathing?" Doc asked as he worked. I didn't hear him. All I could do was stare at her. It looked so bad. So much blood. So much blood. Doc screamed at me, "Morgan, get your shit together. Is she breathing?" I snapped out of it and leaned my head down to her face. I was trying to feel her breath, but I couldn't. "I don't think so. Do something. Please, do something." Doc handed me the shears as he shifted around to her head. "Cut her pants off. I'm going to get her an airway." He pulled a small green tube out of a plastic wrapper. Squirting some lube on it, he placed the lube into her right nostril and gently guided it into her nose. I was cutting her pant leg with the shears, but couldn't take my eyes off what he was doing. At one point, he gently rotated the tube back and forth, and it continued down her nose, coming to a stop at a rubber washer. Doc reached into his pack and pulled out a plastic bag the size of a Nerf ball. It had a mask on one end, which he placed over her face. He then gave the bag a squeeze. Her chest rose as he did, and the mask fogged as the breath was pushed back out. Doc looked at Mary and told her to keep squeezing the bag in a slow, steady rhythm. Now that her airway was secure, he went to work on the many wounds. I worked as well, stuffing gauze into the larger ones and wrapping them in more. She was cut to pieces. Once the more severe wounds were dressed, Doc pulled a compact Mylar-style blanket out of his pack and laid it out. It was green on one side, with some sort of reinforcing material woven through it. With the blanket laid out, Doc told me to grab her feet and help get her on it. Once we had her on the blanket, we picked her up to carry her to the clinic. Mary walked closely with us to keep operating the bag. Sarge and Livingston ran over to help carry her, and soon we were making our way to the clinic. "Is she going to be all right?" I asked Doc as we quickly carried her. "We need to get her to the clinic and see what's going on. I hope so." "We'll do everything we can for her," Sarge replied. "Who is she?" Livingston asked. "One of my daughters," I replied. He didn't respond, but I could tell he felt it. There was already a number of people at the clinic. Many of the lesser wounded had already made their way there. We ran past them into the clinic and set Taylor up on a gurney. Doc pushed her towards one of the two operating suites in the clinic. As we crashed through the door, one of the medical staff stopped us. "You're going to have to wait. She hasn't been triaged yet." "Yes, she has. I did it. She needs to be seen right now," Doc replied. "There are a lot of people that need to be seen," the man in the green scrubs replied. I stepped up and pushed him out of the way. "She's going in now." Doc continued into the OR with her and started calling out for a surgeon. The man I pushed out of the way started to protest. I spun around and drew my pistol. "Get us some fucking help in here, now!" The man raised his hands and disappeared out the door. Doc ran over to me and grabbed the Springfield. "Put that shit away, Morgan. What the hell's wrong with you?" As I holstered it, I said, "I'm not messing around with these people. They need to get in here." Two people in scrubs came through the door and went straight to her. Doc started telling them what he'd found, and the doctor began calling things out. He turned to us and said, "You need to clear out. We need the room." Sarge grabbed my shoulder. "Come on, Morgan. Let them do what they do." I resisted a bit, and he pulled on me. "Come on. There's nothing you can do here." Looking at Doc, I said, "Save her, Doc. Please, save her." Doc looked up and nodded. I could see the determination on his face. Sarge pulled me out of the door, and we walked outside. A number of the guardsmen had gathered at the clinic to assist those needing help. The medical staff consisted of four people, and they were overwhelmed. "She's going to be all right, Morgan. Doc will do whatever it takes," Sarge said. "I know. I just can't imagine any alternative." "Let's go see what we can find at the blast site. I think we know who did it, but let's take a look." "Oh, we know. And they're going to fucking pay for this," I replied. We walked back over to the park. Gone were the wounded, leaving behind only the dead. The ground was littered with broken glass, blood, and body parts. As we walked, the ground crunched beneath our feet. I stepped around the larger pools of blood, and the old man didn't seem to even notice.
"Pure evil genius," Sarge said, as we approached the blast area.
"What do you mean?"
He pointed to the smoking remains of Big Bob's truck.
"They set the damn thing off right beside all that hooch. It increased the effect of the device by adding all that flying glass to the blast."
I looked at what was left of the truck. There was no sign of Big Bob or his two boys. Unless, of course, the pile of intestines hanging in a nearby tree were his.
"That's why she was so cut up," I replied. "Taylor, I mean."
Sarge nodded.
"Yep."
He kicked at some glass on the ground as he shook his head.
"These are some sick fuckers."
Taking in the scene, I said, "Look at this place. No one will ever come here again." Sarge snorted.
"Shit, in Iraq, they'd bomb a market and it would be up and running again an hour later."
"It'll take some time. All these body parts will need to be cleaned up first, but the people will be back." We wandered around the park a little before heading back to the clinic. I really wanted to check on Taylor. We found the rest of the girls sitting on a bench on the sidewalk.
"How are you guys doing? Anyone hurt?"
Sarge asked.
Jess rubbed her head.
"My head hurts,
but we checked each other, and Leanne is the only one with any injuries."
"How's your arm?" I asked.
She looked at the bandage.
"It hurts, but not that bad. Someone checked it out and told me to keep it wrapped up. He said it didn't need stitches or anything."
Trying to smile, I replied,
"Good."
Leanne looked up at me with tears in her eyes.
"How's Taylor? Is she going to be all right?"
Seeing her like that caused me to tear up for the first time.
"I'm going to check on her."
It took everything I had not to break down right there. But I didn't want to do that to her. She was already shaken up, and seeing me upset would only add to it.
"I saw the guy. The guy that left the bomb," Jess said.
Her comment had Sarge's attention.
"You did? Would you recognize him? If he wasn't vaporized?"
"Oh, he wasn't. He set the pack down and started walking away. I called out to him that he forgot his pack, but he took off, moving quickly away. We were chasing him when it blew up."
"Taylor was going to get the bag," Leanne added. "That's why she was so close."
It pained me to hear that. This was one of those times when the what-if game started in your head. What if she hadn't turned to go back? What if I'd said no to them about walking around the park? This sort of thing will eat you up if you're not careful. I felt it was my fault. I had let them come with me. I had let them walk around the park. But in the end, it wasn't my fault, though it was hard for me to see it. There was only one person responsible, and he was still running around town somewhere.
"We're going to check on her now," I said. Leanne nodded. As Sarge and I walked back towards the clinic, a Hummer rolled up beside us. The guardsman in the passenger seat waved me over.
"What's up?" I asked. Stabbing a thumb over his shoulder, he said,
"I think you guys need to talk to this guy."
I looked in back to see a man in his 30s sitting between two other soldiers.
"Who is he?"
"We don't know. But he was running like hell away from town. We thought at odds since everyone else was running towards town after the explosion."
Sarge looked in, eyeballing the man.
Looking at me, he said,
"I'm going to get Jess."
I nodded and looked at the soldiers.
"Drag him out."
They got out and stood the man against the Hummer. One of the two in the back with him handed me a pistol. He had this on him. I examined the SIG, but didn't think much of it. Everyone carries a gun now.
but turning it over, I noticed a barcode on the frame. This caught my attention, as I know only government-issued weapons typically had these. Sure, there were some on the civilian market. SIG made the 229 Navy edition, and a ridiculous 226 with Homeland Security engraved on it. Plus, the government barcode. But this was neither of those. Looking back to the man, he made eye contact with me for a second, before looking back to the ground. Sarge returned with the girls and Eric. As Jess approached, she started shouting, "That's him! That's the son of a bitch that set the pack down!" She closed on him quickly and delivered a devastating knee to his nuts. He collapsed, as if he'd been shot, issuing a loud, deep moan. I grabbed Jess and pulled her back as Fred and Eric both chimed in, reaffirming Jess's statement. "It's him. Definitely him," Eric said. "What do you want us to do with him?" the guardsman asked. "Take him to the PD and lock him up for now. We'll get to him later," I said. Slowly nodding his head, Sarge added, "Oh yes, we will." Leanne stared intently at the man as he was pulled to his feet. She moved in close to him, and he flinched, expecting another knee. Within inches of his face, in a quiet voice, she said, "If my sister dies, I'm going to kill you." I was shocked. In the before, the two got along okay, but they were never really tight. It wasn't until things fell apart that they seemed to become a lot closer. Maybe it was the fact that there was no internet with Facebook, Snapchat, and all the other distractions that come with it. Maybe that forced them to connect to people around them, instead of people they'd never meet. The soldiers loaded the man up and drove off towards the PD. With the girls in tow, we continued towards the clinic to check on Taylor. It was still very crowded at the clinic. The initial chaos had subsided, but there were still many people there being treated. We walked inside and found Doc working on a young boy that had lost a leg from just above the knee. "Where's Taylor?" I asked. Without looking up from his work, he replied, "She's over there." He nodded towards an area closed off with a curtain. "She's sleeping now. She regained consciousness, but we sedated her so she can rest." "Is she going to be all right?" I asked. "She suffered a severe concussion, in addition to all the lacerations. It probably qualifies as a traumatic brain injury." "What's that mean?" Doc looked at the nurse assisting him and said, "Go ahead and dress it up. It's the best we can do for him." Looking back at me, he said, "She's hurt bad, Morgan. But we've learned a lot about these injuries recently. She may have some lingering issues with memory and some changes to her personality. Some of these may not manifest themselves right away and could take months to show up. But to answer your real question, for now, she's okay. She'll live. She needs some rest, and we're keeping her here to watch for swelling on her brain. If she looks good in the next day or two, you'll be able to take her home." Walking over, I pulled the curtain back. Mary was sitting with her. She was in a bedside chair, watching her sleep. Taylor was covered up and appeared to be peacefully asleep. She still had dried blood on her face, the only part I could see. Looking at Mary, I asked, "Can you clean her up? I'm going to have to bring Mel up here, and I don't want her to see Taylor like that." With a slight nod of her head, Mary replied, "Sure." I smiled and nodded, then left to find Doc.
"Doc, we'll leave you to it. There's nothing we can do here, and we're just in the way," Sarge said.
Doc looked around.
"Yeah, we kind of have our hands full at the moment."
Giving Doc a nod, I said, "Thanks," and followed Sarge out the door. Outside, I looked at the girls. "She's sleeping right now. Doc said she's going to be okay, but it will take her some time to get back to normal."
"Can we go see her?" Leanne asked.
I put my arm around her.
"No, baby, not now. They're very busy in there."
Her shoulders dropped, and she looked at the ground.
"Sorry, kiddo. Later."
Sarge snorted and looked at me.
"Now what?" he asked.
I looked back towards the park. The fire was nearly out now, just some smoke rising from what was left of the truck. Taking a deep breath, I said, "Now I have to go tell Mel that Taylor was nearly killed in an explosion." I looked off towards the lake before looking back at Sarge. "Then we get even."
You have been listening to Enforcing Home, The Survivalist, Book 6, produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers, James Tawn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2015 by A American. Production copyright 2015 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.